The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WISO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Rose Lounsbury. She joins us in studio. Hello, Rose.
Hi, Vic. How are you?
Excellent.
Good.
Rose, you've recently published a book that somehow seems apropos for this holiday season that we are just getting into. It's called Less, Minimalism for Real, Practical Ways to Live Better by Owning Less. How did you get the idea to own less?
Well, the book is born very much from my personal experience. So I have triplets, and they're 8 years old now. But when they were about two or three, I started to feel a lot of tension in my house. And I was teaching full-time. I taught middle school language arts, so I had a full-time job outside the home. And what I noticed was my days kind of went in this fashion. I would work all day at my job that paid me teaching middle schoolers, which is, you know, not easy. And then I would come home and it was like clocking in at job number two, which is the much more difficult job of taking care of three little kids. And I would do the bath time and the bedtime and all of those things. And by the time I got my kids in bed, I was pretty exhausted. And I had about 45 minutes left before I had to get myself to bed. And so what I noticed was, instead of sitting on the couch and relaxing during the 45 minutes that I had, which is what I wanted to do because I'm naturally an introverted person and I need that time to recharge, what I did was I just went around my whole house picking up this and that, and I was constantly just trying to reorganize and put things away. And I didn't ever feel relaxed in my home. And so what I started to feel was the sense of my home is not a place where I am comfortable. And so I was talking to a friend about this, and this was, again, about 5 years ago. I said, you know, I just never feel at peace in my home. And it was actually right after the holidays. And we had just come back. We had lots of gifts from the relatives in our van. And I got to my house, and I thought, man, I don't even have space for the things I already own. Where am I going to find space for this new stuff? And my friend looked at me, and she said, well, have you thought about minimalism? And I had no idea what the word meant. I imagined like monks living in a cave in Tibet or somewhere like that. But my friend said, you know, there's books and blogs about this. You can read about it. It's something you can do just to live a simpler life. And so I started reading about it, and I was kind of hooked. You know, it was sort of the thing that made sense to me. Instead of trying to organize all my stuff all the time just to get rid of the things that didn't add value to our lives. And so over an 8-month period, I did that in our house, just, you know, in the little bits of time that I had here and there, I would declutter and let go of things that weren't valuable. We didn't love it. We didn't use it. And it kind of transformed my life because I then, at the end of my long days, was able to sit down on my couch with a mug of tea and a magazine, and I could relax and enjoy my life. And I had the downtime that I needed to recharge myself. So that was really what inspired me to write a book like this, because it impacted my personal life so much, made it so much better when I had less stuff.
Were you and the magazine and the couch the only things left in the room at that point?
Yes, I got rid of the children and the husband. That made a big difference, actually. No, there are other things in the home. And I think that's a misconception. People think, oh, man, a minimalist home, you know, that it must look like an art museum, you know, like a very new art museum with white walls and a white couch and one painting. But my home is very much a family home, a home where kids live and people live. But all of the things in my home are things that I either use or love. And that's very different than the way that it was before, when I had a lot of things that I didn't use or love.
In case you're just tuning in, Rose Lounsbury joins us on the program. And she has a new book out called Less, Minimalism for Real, Practical Ways to Live Better by Owning Less. How did you get to the point where you decided to write a book?
Well, during my process of going through my own home, because I was so excited about the changes that it was making in my life, I started blogging about that. So I had my own personal blog, and I would write, oh, okay, you know, today I decluttered the towels, and the next day I'm like, oh, I'm going to deal with my paper. And I would just write about what I was doing. And that's kind of how my business was born. I now help people do this in their own homes. But I decided to write the book because it's something that I've always wanted to do. I mean, I'm a person who loves to read. I've always loved to write. I used to teach writing to seventh graders. And it's been a personal dream of mine to always write a book. I never really would have thought I would write a book about this exact subject. But because my blog became such an outlet for me and it became so helpful and to other people, I realized that this was a message that I think a lot of people needed and wanted to hear. And so that's how this book kind of came to be. And I happened to get connected with a publisher who was the right fit for me, and we just made it happen.
Are you still blogging?
Yes. Yes.
What's your blog address?
It's at my website. So if you go to roselounsbury.com, and that's Rose, and Lounsbury is LOUNSBURY.com, and you click on the blog tab, you'll find all my blog posts.
Cool. You are listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. And today, giving voice to a writer who wants us to minimalize, and she's trying to help us out with that. A lot of us apparently have problems.
Not you, Vic. Everyone but you.
Now, don't.
This is a very minimalist studio, I have to say. I don't see any clutter.
That's Peter. Peter doesn't like clutter.
Well, that's good, Peter. You're doing a good job.
Yes. Now, I'm thinking that when you went through this process, that you probably encountered some resistance. One thing I noted in reading your book is that you have a very good idea about how to approach this, and I mean by not nagging.
Yeah.
Now, I would think nagging would be a big part of this process for a lot of people, and I felt very good about that approach.
Well, good. I think throughout history, women especially have learned that nagging is really just not an effective tool. I think women and men would agree. Nagging, nobody likes to be nagged, and it's a really poor tool to use to try to change people's behavior. So when I went about decluttering and minimizing in my own home, I very specifically focused on just my stuff. And that's what I tell my readers and I tell my clients. You know, I'm not going to come over and help you declutter your husband's garage without him there, because that's disrespectful. That's not going to get you where you want to be. If you start with your own things, just like any positive change, if you wanted to eat healthier, you wanted your family to eat healthier, you need to be the one who first eats healthier. And when your family sees you eating the fruits and veggies, then when you approach them with the fruits and veggies, you're no longer a hypocrite. So, and I will say, when I started decluttering, I really thought the issue was my kids and my husband. I really thought, well, I'll get rid of some of my stuff, but the real problem is their stuff. And I was shocked at how much stuff in the house was actually mine. And so I think when we nag others, it does a great disservice to us, because it not only annoys them and prevents them from changing, but it prevents us from looking at ourselves and seeing what we might need to do to change ourselves first. So I always recommend you start with yourself and then let your influence affect the other people in your house. It's much more effective that way.
My mother didn't nag, but she had a very direct approach. If she didn't like an object or an article of clothing, it would just simply disappear. You knew. You knew that she didn't like those pants.
She had just, the magical decluttering fairy had appeared.
My guest is Rose Lounsbury, and I should note that Rose is a resident of our region. She lives in the Dayton area. So she's what we call a local talent here in our area. And I like the fact that you have a sense of humor in your book. At one point you say, I'll address them all in my next book. Rose solves all the world's problems in 200 pages or less. It will cost about $1 million per copy. Pre-order now.
You could still pre-order that. I haven't had very many orders. I don't know why.
I think that's very funny.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, when I write my blog, writing for me is an outlet. So writing my blog and writing my book, I try to entertain myself. I try to see if I can make myself laugh or chuckle. And sometimes I'll just be taking a walk or a jog, or I'll think of that, you know, turn of phrase. And I'll be like, oh, that's the one. Where can I work that in? So I thought about that sentence for quite a while. So I'm glad you enjoyed it.
The book is Less, Minimalism for Real, Practical Ways to Live Better by Owning Less. And with the holidays underway, this is an issue that is coming to the forefront quickly, isn't it? Because we are a consumer society. Our culture seems to be based on getting more and more and more stuff, particularly around this time of year. Don't you have a kind of a thing that you practice where if something comes in, something has to go out? How do you do that?
Yes, I have. It's called the one-in, one-out rule, and it's something that I practice to maintain the amount of things that we have in the home. This isn't a good rule if you actually want to declutter because it'll just maintain the level of things you have.
Mm.
But my kids know, and I know my husband knows, that when we get something new, we let something else go, usually through donation if we can, so that it can be used by somebody else. So a really good example, my daughter has a thing for big stuffed animals, like the ones that are about 3 feet tall. And so for her Christmas list, she asked for a really big teddy bear, like the size of herself. And I was like, okay. She said, but Mama, I'll donate my giraffe if I get the teddy bear. And I didn't prompt her to do that. So 2 years ago, she'd asked for a giant giraffe, which she received from Santa. But she already knew, because our family practices this lifestyle, that she can't ask for something of that mammoth size without letting something similar go. So she, you know, hopefully we'll see what Santa brings.
You're into acronyms. In fact, the title LESS is an acronym, an important one for your entire theory here. Can you explain?
Yes. So when I went to write the book, I wanted to write a book that it was a how-to, but also gave a lot of why. So the beginning of my book really sets the why for minimalism. Why would you want to do this? How does it benefit you? How does it benefit the environment? And then about the middle of the book, I get into how to actually go about it. And I thought about how I help my actual clients. You know, what are the steps that I do with them? And I was able to make it fit into an acronym called LESS, which makes sense because the whole point is to be lessening your load. So the L is for lay out your vision and purpose. So the first thing I always want to know, and I think it's important, is to lay out what you want your space to look like. So if it's your bedroom, you know, your vision might be, okay, everything is put away, there aren't any clothes on the floor, yada, yada. And then I also want to know your purpose for any space, because that will determine what you do in that space, what you need to keep in that space. So for a bedroom, maybe your purpose is obviously sleep, getting ready, or maybe it's also a home office. You know, it depends on the type of space. So laying out your vision and purpose is the L. Then E stands for empty, which means after you know what you want to see and what the purpose is, you try to empty the entire space. So if it was something as small as a junk drawer, literally you could just dump it out. But an entire room is a little more tricky to empty. So I always say you want to work from top to bottom, left to right around the room. And you can chunk the room into smaller bits. So maybe you just do the first wall one day. Especially, you know, I've worked in a lot of rooms that you can't even walk into. So to try to empty an entire room like that would be very overwhelming. So we just chunk it and say, okay, today we're going to handle this chunk. And then the next day we're going to do this chunk. And we sort of work our way around that way. But the goal is whatever space you're dealing with, you empty everything out so that you can see the space empty. And it kind of gives you an idea of how it could look, just like if you were moving in for the first time. And then the first S is sort it twice. And so once you empty it, you sort it into like-with-like piles. That's the first sort. And then the second sort is keep, trash, donate, sell elsewhere. So if it needs to go somewhere else in your house. And then the last S is systemize. So at the very end, you try to put a system in place. So it could be something like a one-in, one-out rule. Or if you're into, you know, bins and baskets and those kinds of things with labels, you could do that at that point. But a lot of times I think people fail in decluttering their space because they try to start with that first S, which is systemize. They try to start by buying the closet system or buying bins or buying organizing supplies. And that's actually the very last thing you should do. Because if it was as easy as just buying stuff, we'd all be organized. We'd all have simplified, minimized spaces. But just buying bins and things like that isn't going to actually make you organized. So that's why you do it at the end.
I'm curious. You talked about walking into these rooms that you can't walk through. Now, were you let in there by a relative? How did you get into the room?
I snuck in. These are clients of mine. And a lot of times people have a room in their house.
Okay.
So usually people's homes that I go into, like the main floors might, you know, You can sit on the furniture. You can walk through. But they'll say, okay, I don't want to show you the attic, or I don't want to show you the basement. Mm. And so depending on the level of trust, we might work in certain parts of their house first. But eventually they'll show me the room. And it's typically basement, attic, garage, or the home office slash guest room slash dumping ground. That is the room that you can't actually walk into or use very well.
Okay. In case you're just joining us, my guest is Rose Lounsbery. Her book is Less, Minimalism for Real, Practical Ways to Live Better by Owning Less. You have a wonderful example of towels. And I think towels is something that – this is a subject that really hits home, I think. We all use them. And we all probably have a few extra towels.
Yes. You know, it's funny. One of my first blog posts was about my towels. It was an example of one of those little areas of my house that I decluttered, and I blogged about it. And that was, for whatever reason, the blog that people kept talking to me about. I can't believe the towels. I can't believe what you did with the towels. And so basically what I did when I decluttered my towels was I opened up the cupboard where we kept the towels, and it had towels and sheets and tablecloths and all sorts of things in there. And instead of just asking myself, how could I organize this towel cupboard better? Because the towel cupboard was – the towels were spilling out of the cupboard like often happens. I asked myself, how many towels do we need? You know, and when I really thought about how many we needed, the answer came to me pretty quickly. For adults, two per adult. And for kids, you know, my kids at the time were three, so I thought one per kid. And even now, they'll still use the same towel. They don't care. And then if you have guests, two for guests. So for our family of five, that's about nine towels. So I decluttered down to about nine towels. And I took a before and after picture of the cupboard, and I posted it on my blog. And people were just like, I can't believe this. Two towels per person. It's crazy. But the crazy thing is that, you know, I did that about 5 years ago, and I've never bought more towels in 5 years. I've also never had the towel cupboard be completely empty in 5 years. So it tells me a couple things. And the first is that I can live with a lot less than I think I can. And secondly, that I can definitely live with a lot less than society tells me I should. Because I guarantee you, when Josh and I registered for those towels, it was the, you know, prescribed number on the Bed Bath & Beyond registry. You know, you need X number of towels. And so, of course, we sign up for that many towels and you think you need them all. But most people's homes, I'm guessing you're probably washing towels pretty regularly, so you're probably using the same two or three off the top of the stack anyway. And all of the ones underneath, I mean, the thing is, those could be very useful to someone at a homeless shelter. There are lots of places that need linens. And so when I help clients with their towels, I typically say, hey, you know what? I know a homeless shelter, St. Vincent de Paul, could use these. Can I take them to them? And I think sometimes that helps people to let go of that excess when they realize there are people in great need, and how the things that we're not using could really make a difference to some of the neediest people in our communities.
I guess one of the issues that comes to my mind after reading your book is that it's great to donate, as you say, to people who can use this item.
Mm-hmm.
And throwing away stuff is a concern because we have so much stuff that probably shouldn't be in a landfill on Thanksgiving. I had dinner with some friends, and they asked me if I could help them move a really big, early model screen TV, one of the huge, heavy ones. And we loaded it up in the vehicle, and they took it to Goodwill. And Goodwill said, we don't want it.
Yeah, they won't take those.
So what do you do?
Well, TVs are the hardest things to get rid of. There's a really great website called Earth911, and I don't know if that's .org or .com, but Earth911. It will tell you, if you put in your zip code and the item you want to recycle or donate, it will tell you everywhere within a certain mile radius of you that will take that item. Mm. So sometimes you might be surprised. You know, Bed Bath & Beyond might take that back. But I know
They would take back the TV?
No. Oh. The TVs are the one thing that really need to go in a landfill. They'll take the towel. Bed Bath & Beyond will take batteries. They'll take other things. But so if you have specific things like that, that you're like, I don't want it to go to a landfill, I'd like it at least to be recycled, check earth911.org, I think it is first. But TVs specifically, the big old heavy ones, no one will take them. And I've talked to the 1-800-GOT-JUNK guys, and they're like, yeah, nobody takes these. So those are pretty much, as far as I know, and I could be wrong, but they're pretty much going to end up in a landfill, which is very hard to take, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't be taking them over to Rose's house either.
Yeah, don't take them to my house.
Don't you even think about that. My guest is Rose Lounsbury. Her book is Less: Minimalism for Real, Practical Ways to Live Better by Owning Less. And I had a lovely flashback to my my nuns in parochial school who taught us about limbo and who goes to limbo. And they also taught us about who goes to purgatory. And you have purgatory in your house.
I
was very impressed. I always wondered about that.
You didn't realize that purgatory was my house when you were learning about it in Catholic school. So purgatory, and all the parents out there, I think, will understand where I'm coming from on this one. Children bring home a lot of little trinkets. So schools nowadays often can't give candy as prizes. So, and I used to be a teacher, so I understand those teachers need to incentivize those kids. And often that becomes, you know, little plastic trinkets that kids bring home from school, little bracelets or little pictures and sorts of things like that. And I'm very much a big believer in having your kids make decisions about their own stuff. But I also am a believer in decision fatigue, which is when you ask them to make, or anyone to make, decisions about every tiny little thing they own, they'll just get exhausted and overwhelmed and want to shut down. So I have a box, a bin on top of my fridge that I call purgatory. So when my kids bring home the trinkety stuff, like from a treat bag from a birthday party or from school, I just sort of wait for them to sort of leave it sitting around, which happens within about 20 minutes of it coming home. And then I just put it on top of the fridge in the bin. And I wait, and I see if I'm asked to reproduce it. And I have a 98-2 rule, which means 98% of the time I'm not asked for any of it. But the 2% of the time that I'm asked about it, I can produce it 98% of the time. So I would say that I'm winning with that, and it just declutters that little trinkety stuff. Also, little, you know, I love my children, but every little sticky note that says, "I love you, Mommy," I can't keep all of that forever, but I will kind of put it up there to see if they ask me, "Oh, do you have that little note?" And I can say, "Oh, yes." And I do keep things for my kids. I don't want anyone to think that I don't. But you can't, you know, I often say you can't keep everything, or nothing is special, right? Not everything can be a 10. So I am very particular and intentional about the things that I do keep from my kids, because I know that if I kept every little tiny thing, it would distract me from the things that were truly meaningful.
When they do actually request one of those 2% requests, you said you satisfy those 98% of the time. Are you saying that 2% of the time you tell them no?
2% of the time when they ask for things that are in purgatory? Well, here's what I say. 2% of the time I say, "I don't know where that is."
Oh, okay.
And that's an honest answer, because if it went in the trash, I really don't know where it is.
Right. Sounds like my mother. Yeah.
This would be your mother's, Vic's yeah. mother's way of dealing with clutter.
The kitten is now living on a nice farm.
Yes. It's got a new home.
Okay. You mentioned junk drawers. We're not going to go into the junk drawer, but we are going to talk about, as it is December, we are going to talk about the elephant that isn't in the room. The elephant is in the residence, and the elephant is gifts.
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about gifts. You, I'm not sure. We may have some merchants out there probably going to want to turn off the radio right about here. But
I support local merchants.
Tell us about gifts and your viewpoint.
Well, gifts are tricky terrain, I think, if you want to pursue a minimalist lifestyle. I think that there's a human urge to want to give each other gifts, because when you go to someone's house or someone does something for you, you want to give them something. And I think that I often look at gifts as a vehicle for love and goodwill. So let's say I sent you a Christmas ornament with a little note that says, "Thank you, Vic, for having me on the show. You're wonderful. Merry Christmas. Here you go."
That goes straight in the trash.
It goes straight in the trash. You're like, "Oh, forget it." but before you put it in the trash, the purpose of that gift was not really to give you a Christmas ornament. The purpose of the gift was to tell you, "Hey, I care about you. I have good feelings toward you. And here is this item to be the messenger and carry that feeling to you." So I tell people, if someone has given you a gift, what they really gave you were feelings of love and goodwill. And you can keep the feelings without keeping the item if the item is not helpful to you. You can let that item go to someone else who could find it helpful, who could find it useful. But you still get to keep all of the warm feelings that the gift carried to you. I also have a few other things I talk about with gifts, which is when you receive a gift from someone, really your only obligation to the giver is to say thank you. Someone gives you a gift, you say thank you, it is the right thing to do. At that point, your obligation to the gift and the giver is over. If you have thanked them, your obligation is done. It is now yours to do with as you will. If you love it and you can use it, keep it by all means. But if you can't, find it a home where it can be useful to someone else.
You're a re-gifter?
You know, I think everyone's a re-gifter.
Okay.
I know this because I go into a lot of people's homes and everyone has the drawer or closet of gifts. Everyone does.
Really?
Maybe not you, but most people do. And then my other thing talking about gifts is on the side of the person who's giving a gift. If you're giving someone a gift, once that person has thanked you, then your influence on that gift is over. It's uh-huh. not really polite to ask about the gift once you've been thanked. Now, of course, we all want people to love what we give them. We want them to say, oh, my gosh, I love that sweater. We want to see their kid playing with the toy. It's just not realistic that that's going to happen every single time. So once you know they've received it, you've been thanked, you need to be quiet about it because it's theirs now to do with as they will.
So when I see somebody driving down the street in the Mercedes that I gave to somebody else, I should just go, yeah. Okay.
I want to be on your gift list.
All right.
You're giving out Mercedeses.
By the way, what kind of a Christmas ornament are you going to send me?
You know, I'll have to maybe I'll have my kids make you something really nice.
Okay.
We've got popsicle sticks at home.
Oh, perfect. My guest is Rose Lounsbury. Her book is Less Minimalism for Real. And Rose lives in the Dayton area. And I heard a rumor you listen to WYSO.
I do. I'm a member.
All right, excellent.
I became the sustaining member because every time the pledge drives were on, I'd feel so guilty. I said, okay, I just need to give every month. So everybody give every month, then you cannot feel guilty.
I have just enough time to briefly ask you about passing on memorabilia and things to the next generation, or in other words, as your English teacher would say, for whom am I saving this?
So memorabilia, like gifts, it gets into some tricky territory. And one of the things that I always tell people is the only person you should save memorabilia for is you. I think when memorabilia is passed on and on and on, if it's meaningful to the person, then obviously keep it. But what I see a lot in homes that I'm in are people who are saving the memories of people from generations back, and the memory no longer means anything to them. So one of the things I talk about is, you know, memories are for you. And you should be the keeper of your own memories. So don't feel like you are obligated to save the memories of past generations. A very interesting story. I was doing a presentation and this woman raised her hand. She said, I have a picture of a baby. And this picture of this baby has been passed down. Nobody knows who the baby is anymore, how it's related to the family. But they do know that a few months after the picture of the baby was taken, the baby did pass away, which is very sad and terrible. So no one has ever in the family gotten rid of this picture of the baby that died. But no one knows who the baby is anymore. And this woman has become the keeper of the picture of the baby who passed away. And so I told her, you know, the only person you should keep memories for is you. The memory of this baby is someone else's memory. It's not yours. So you are free to do with that as you will. You're free to let go of that because it's not your memory to keep.
Well, Rose, it's been a pleasure meeting you and having you on the program.
Thank you so much. It's been great being here.
My guest has been Rose Lounsbury. Her book is Less, Minimalism for Real, Practical Ways to Live Better by Owning Less. And I know if you look on Amazon, you can find it on there for the Book Nook. I'm Vic McCunis.